And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your No Show. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan, and we welcome you this evening to the RBR Blog Talk Radio Show on the RB Network that addresses New Thought Metaphysics, which simply means a new way of thinking as we move beyond the physical and discuss the metaphysical aspects of spiritual intervention that incorporate the wisdom of yesterday with the technology of today and allows us to bridge the gap and circumnavigate the spiritual highways of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It is my pleasure to serve as your host and to invite spirit-filled people to share with us how it is that they are showing up in the world, how they are making a difference in their neighborhood mosque, temples, churches, synagogues, and even the neighborhood 7-Elevens, and then how they are taking that to their states, to their counties, to their countries, and ultimately to the world. If you would like to receive advance notice of guests on the No Show, send an email to me, Robert McMillan, at robtmcm@aol.com. That is robtmcm@aol.com, requesting that your name be placed on our service list. And we will keep you informed about who is coming and when, as well as special opportunities to participate on the program as a guest co-host and special prizes that we are offering for sharing what your top shows are and why. So we invite you to stay tuned for more information because a lot more good stuff is happening. Well, folks, you know, a lot is going on right now in this world of ours, in this experience that we call life and living all over America and all over the world. And we want to talk about some of the things that just happened recently, this week, if you will, in Ferguson, Missouri. The eyes and the hearts and the minds of America were there. We're a part of that experience. And what ended up happening was some things that we all ended up scratching our heads. And for me, that's difficult because I have a bald spot at the top of my head. So when I scratch, it hurts. And what was going on that I saw on my television screen in Ferguson, Missouri, challenged me and bothered me tremendously. And I feel and I felt and I heard from many of you that it was bothering you as well. And so I decided that this evening, instead of having another guest who was kind enough to relinquish his spot and say, listen, what went on there is so important that I don't mind doing this. I want for you to have people to hear the positive outcome of a situation that came about in Ferguson, Missouri. And he continued, I want to hear that because I'm looking for something positive as well. So that is what we are going to discuss this evening. We are going to talk about how it is that we can take something that seems to be negative and to an extent is negative, but change that question mark into an exclamation point. We are going to talk about achieving a positive outcome from the Ferguson experience. We know that life does come at us fast, but in every situation and circumstance that we have gone through, when we look back, we are able to see that nugget of gold that came from that experience for ourselves, for people in our neighborhood, for people in our blocks, for people in our cities, and ultimately for people in our worlds. Sometimes that experience is very challenging and it hurts, as with racism and segregation, where we know that what people are doing is wrong. But I remember Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. saying a while back, I am convinced, he said, that God has not turned this world over to the then Lester Maddoxes, Orville E. Faubuses, and George Wallaces of the world. and that ultimately everything will be all right. And so those are the types of statements that we want to hold on to, that we want to make certain that other people are reminded of, because during times of challenge and chaos and crises, and by the way, the word chaos means both crises, which means challenge, and opportunity. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a time of challenge and opportunity for us. It is an understandable time of not understanding, but it is also a time of dealing with that which is not understood and changing that question mark into that exclamation point, whereby we are then able to say, I am glad that I was part of the change that was brought about because of this challenging situation. So invite your friends to go ahead and call in on 347-838-9142. They still have time to call in, and then press 1 once they do that. So that will allow us to know. And Mr. Cecil McDaniel, our RBR director, has been kind enough to fill in the phenomenal shoes of Rhonda Harrison, who is health challenged a little right now. And Mr. Cecil, we appreciate your doing that so much, and all of how it is that you show up, not only for the No Show and all of the programs that are a part of this network, but how you show up in the world and do the things that you do. So we are excited about that. Right now, also on the line with us is Mr. Al Lockett. Al is a very good friend of mine. You all will know him. He has been on the show with us numerous times. And Al is a community activist. He is involved in the community very, very, very much so. He has a Feed the Children program. He also does a number of other things, and he is extremely busy. Yet he decided to stop by here, and that this was an important enough conversation for all of us to have to help other people to feel good about what is going on. Gentlemen, I want to go ahead and bring you all into this conversation, and I will share with you that for both of you, your microphones will be hot the entire time that we are on, so do not say anything negative or disparaging about the host, because he will come back to get you a little bit later on, okay? But I am so glad that both of you are here and with us. Al, let me start with you. Let's go back for a moment to those days and those feelings a couple of days ago when you, like me, probably were watching the situation in Ferguson, Missouri. What were your thoughts? What were your feelings at that time?
Well, you know, as I might have mentioned to you, Reverend Mack, that I where I grew up back in 1967, the riots of Newark, and I was kind of taken back to that period of time, realizing that there was a lot of destruction in our own community. There were a lot of negative things going on, people getting hurt, and the majority of the people did not really fully realize what the reason was for or why. They would, it just mob mentality takes over, and it's very sad because all of the destructiveness only hurts the community, and there was nothing that was going to be accomplished from that activity.
Absolutely, and you know what? That's a great point for us to sit around for a moment, because one of the things that many people always ask me as I travel around is, especially people who are not of color, because they don't understand why it is that that is what ends up happening. But you see, that is where it is that we are at the moment. And the situation, not justifying it, understand me, but the pinned-up frustration from within that not only is from just that moment, but perhaps from days and weeks and months and years of challenge and not knowing how to channel that energy, it bottles up, and when anything is bottled up, what happens? It explodes. And when it explodes, where does it explode? It explodes right where it is, right there. And whoever is in that area, that arena at that point, is then harmed and hurt by it. Mr. Cecil, I wonder if you could share with us and respond to the same question that I asked of my friend Al Lockett, and also follow up in terms of what I am saying in terms of pinned-up frustration and emotion.
Well, first of all, I must admit I may have been one of the few who was not watching TV for the ruling. There are so many other different things that were going on at the time. I was in a conference call on another matter, and I didn't put the TV on. Anyway, after the fact, I went out and I did my research on what was going on. And one of the things that I did notice when I did happen to switch the TV over and I saw the looting, I said, well, that's interesting. Here we have some people looting and for quite a long time, and there's a cameraman for the news station, and they're photographing this and documenting this. Okay, so I asked myself then, why would we be allowed to be shown in the media as looters and looting in this manner? And all of these things to me helps to, in one sense, desensitize others to our plight, because they then see us as barbarians and so forth. And so then, in some kind of twisted way, people then begin to justify their actions, all of their actions on either side. The most important thing that I saw and I felt when I saw the looting was like, this dishonors the very man, a young man, that we say we're out here in support of and trying to find justice for, by you looting and taking TVs. Were you taking them to his family? Were you stealing these things to raise money for his legal fund, for their legal defense fund, or what have you? No, you weren't. You were just looting for no good reason. Because we do not understand what our remedies are in law, we are very much apt to channel our energy into some very unnecessary and very useless activity that has nothing whatsoever to do with the situation. At the same time, I saw another situation about a 12-year-old child who was... The law was called on this trial, but the person who called the law on the 911 call said that the child was pointing a toy pistol. They identified the pistol as being an air gun, this and that and the other. Still, when the officers arrived on the scene, almost instantaneously, they got out of the vehicle, bang, shot the child dead. There was almost no time. There was no negotiation, this or that or the other. So I felt that people feel powerless because they see recurrences of these things over and over again, and they do not know how. But I agree with you. This is that the looting and so forth and things that went on is definitely not a way to handle it, and it does not honor the one whose life has been taken, nor his or her survivors.
Cecil,
I'm sorry, Joe.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Al. That's all right. Go ahead.
You said something very significant. You said they do not know how to change that particular dynamic. They only know how to react. And moving forward, if there is no change in that dynamic, we're doomed to repeat those same situations again and again. I was talking earlier about the fact that one of the things that sticks out on this situation is what kind of instruction takes place at home with these kids. You know, one of the things that you saw in Ferguson was a case where there was a lack of respect for authority. Irregardless of how people feel about the police or anything, the fact of the matter is, in that situation, when the police officer asked them to move out of the middle of the street, one young man did, and the other one didn't. The other one man challenged the authority of the police at that moment. In the other situation where the young boy, 12 years old, what parent in these days would allow their kid outside playing with any kind of replica of a gun? And I remember talking to Mac earlier. I actually instructed my son and some other young males as they were growing up on how to deal with the police. You know, if they were driving, about putting both hands on the wheel, never going for your license or your registration or anything until they come to the window and they ask you for it. Just simple things. But we have a breakdown in the discipline and the rule of authority in the home. If a child doesn't respect their parents first, they're not respecting any other adult. I work in education, and I see it all the time. There are teachers in high school that are actually afraid to teach because the kids that they are teaching have no respect for authority, they don't listen, and they actually threaten teachers. So now we ask the question, why is there so much of a police presence in our community? You look at all the other communities. You can go down Indian communities, Italian, Hispanic. We have the most police presence because we are doing the most damage to ourselves. We're creating the most crime in our own communities, and it demands police presence. If you don't want the police around, then don't create a situation in which they must be there.
Well, I would agree to some degree, and then to another, I may disagree. The same reason why there's lots of police presence in our communities is the same reason why there's alcohol, drugs, billboards, and all kinds of other illicit advertisements and marketing to our people in our community. It has to do more so than just the people in the community who are actually, to some degree, victims of a systematic, cultivation of an attitude that you're not worth anything. And so they don't value themselves to the degree that they would not put themselves in harm's way. They are also instructed through the media. If you're into your entertainment, like I'm into entertainment, that's to teach you. What kind of instructions are they getting at home? Most of the time, they are on their TVs, their iPhones, Androids, this, et cetera, and the entertainment that they're getting, that is their instruction at home. And that in itself is a topic for another discussion, because we have to then look at what's being piped into their communities, what's being piped into their minds, why it's done. Is it by accident or is it systematic? If you ever heard of a term called social engineering, and you know what it is, then you would then be able to understand why our children look, act, and behave like degenerates, because it's an actual product of social engineering. Do you not know that people look at our children when they're little innocent boys and girls and decide how many of them are going to make it through elementary school into high school and to college, et cetera, and how many are going to end up in the prisons. And they start building prisons when the children are still almost still in diapers, just getting out of diapers, preparing for them to enter into the prison system. Now, if we could spend that much money and effort and energy into predicting that they are going to be wards of a prison and, in fact, going so far as to make sure that they are, because you put in their way things that will cause them to stumble and end up in prison, it's a lot of things that we can address with regards to this. We have to take responsibility for that which we do. You haven't been trained better. You can't do better. You got parents that are also of the same mindset that these children are. So the child can't get it from the parent because the parent doesn't have it to give because they did not get it. But we have to change how our people are being educated, what's being piped into our communities, how to turn the TV off, how to turn that PlayStation off, and this and that and the other. Anything that is separating them from their higher spiritual vibration, we need to do an assessment. Does this contribute to a higher spiritual vibration or a lower spiritual vibration? If so, I can tell you where that will lead to.
Well, you know, one of the things you said.
Hold on, Al.
Yeah.
I want to piggyback what you're saying there, Mr. Cecil. But I want to go back a little bit further to what Al was saying. First of all, it is unfortunate that certain people who are African Americans are not given the same options that people who come from Jamaica or Cuba or Puerto Rico or Germany or Japan are given, because of the fact that they have a certain cultural identity. African Americans, too, have a certain cultural identity. Now, it is unfortunate that is the case, but it is the case. So here is where, while I recognize that and I understand that and I know that is not right, I say to my 14-year-old grandson, my 12, 11, 10 on down the line grandchildren, you have to do things differently, because once you go out into those streets, people are going to look at the color of your black skin, and then they, if they are in authority, may respond to you in a way that they should not. So therefore, rather than bring challenge to yourself, here is what I want for you to do. I want for you to do the things that you were saying a moment ago, Al. Those are the same things I say to my now 34-year-old son. Listen, no, it may not be fair. No, it may not be right that that officer approaches your car from that side and has his or her hand on their gun already. It may not, and it probably is not, and it is not fair, but it is what it is. So here's what I want for you to do in order for me not to feel the pain that the parents feel in Ferguson, Missouri tonight. I want for you to do exactly what you said, Al. Put your hands up on the steering wheel. Let that person know that there is nothing that you are doing right now. Now, that is not to say that something negative may not still happen to you, because that does happen. And that's the other side of that challenge. So, yes, number one, guys, we do have to instruct our children differently. And again, it is unfortunate, but it is necessary. Number two, we need to have laws changed. And so we have to do that, as the president was saying, both before he went both before the Ferguson incident and as he was in Chicago yesterday speaking as well. We need to work within the system, though, to make certain that laws are changed and that law enforcement is educated differently and appropriately. Now, I want to go back to you guys, and I want to ask you, because also know that at any point in time, we may have a couple of the politicians, the political figures that we invited to come on the program. I knew that it was the last minute, but I felt that this was so critical to get this information out, to have a discussion about it, because that which we discuss, then we can change. That which others hear, when they felt and thought one way, they then have the opportunity, should they choose to do so, we then have the opportunity, should we choose to do so, to change our minds and to impact a different outcome to that situation. So I want to for you all to address also for me how it is that after you all saw how the leaders, though, came out and said what they had to say, Professor Michael Dyson and President Obama and so many others, what were your thoughts relative to their statements, and how do you feel the children, because that's who all of us are trying to get through to, and the politicians, again, that's who all of us are trying to get through to, what impact do you feel that that had upon them? And I'll start with you, Al, this time, if I may.
Yeah. I felt that there was very little impact, because it's the same every time. The leaders come out, and they make statements, and they talk about, let's do this peacefully, and let's do this. And never is the real problems ever fully addressed. And I imagine they can't be addressed in a 30-second soundbite, you know, or a photo op. They really can't. But it's the same each time. And so it doesn't have any impact. And so here you have the president on the split screen talking about the peaceful movement and peaceful, and then the other screen, they are burning houses and burning cars and everything, totally the opposite. There are some that are in this game just for the photo op and the fame that it brings, and there are some people that are in this because they're serious about what goes on in the community. And until we start to address the root cause, and Cecil, I heard what you said, and I really don't see where we disagree on anything, because I agree 100% with you, what you were saying. Until we begin to address the root cause of this problem, it's just going to continue to be a photo op for the leadership and everything. They did not move that community to not riot. They did not move it in Philadelphia, in New York, and in some of these other places. There are people, if there's something going on, somebody's making money on it. In this country, we're a capitalist society. If it's happening, somebody's making money. Somebody wants it to happen, regardless of where it comes from. And you have to keep that in mind when you see these kind of things.
You're absolutely correct. Well, because we live not only in a capitalist society, but first of all, what does capitalism mean? To capitalize. If we say capitalize, then there must be one that we're that's capitalized upon. Generally, we are the ones who are capitalized upon. And because we are disenfranchised, one, because we are in a fascist society, and that actually what's going on this lower level between black and white, Asian, this, et cetera, is nothing, has nothing to do with the real picture and what's really going on, because there is one puppet master who's pulling the strings and who benefits from us being at war with each other. Because if we are at war with each other in the streets, then the people who finance tanks, guns, et cetera, they get to make more money because they get to sell more guns, more tanks, more tear gases, and so on and so on. So you have somebody who's capitalizing on each and every one of these situations. I agree with with the brother who said that. And see, that's what you really have to look at. Now, how do we capitalize on the situation? I'm a scout master. I'm a scout leader, and I work with a scout troop. And before that, my involvement in community, I created several community-based programs to educate our children. I'm probably one of the pioneers in moving our children into the computer era, into the era of technology, and by starting an after-school program and getting members of our community, black, white, and others, to believe in our program enough to educate our people, because they felt that if we educate them, if we give them some more options, then they may not be so inclined to exercise those few options that they have currently. So for that reason, we were able to do things in our community to raise our children's awareness to the fact that there are other things in the community other than these streets. There is something else that we can learn. We can expand our consciousness. We can expand our intellect. We can tap into those resources within and move beyond this other stuff. See, what happens so many times in our community is that the kinds of things that we watch on TV keep us engaged in the lower animal nature and do not allow us to ascend into our higher, more intellectual and or spiritual and intuitive selves. So because we operate on an animal level, all of the stuff that you see going on in the media with us, they always show us at an animal, operating at an animal level, because that's what they want to see and perpetuate. Brothers, one of the things that I saw a couple of years ago, and I thought I would never see on the evening news, is where they showed these groups of African men who were actually mowed down for protesting for higher wages. They were surrounded in like a pit. They were surrounded by people with tanks and riot gear and all this and that and the other, and they were basically mowed down. But this was showed on the evening news, and I was saying that things like this, as graphic as they were, desensitizes people to the point where they say, oh, that's acceptable. The first time I saw that, I was really shocked. The second time, I was a little less shocked. The third and fourth time I saw it, okay, oh, well, that's the way it is, you know. And so when the rest of society becomes desensitized to us and what our plight is, it becomes acceptable to them, and not only them, but us, that, hey, that's the way it is. And so we all become party to the lie that we are animals and the lie that they are animals, you know, from both perspectives. And so what we have to do is unplug from that reality and step and shift into a new reality wherein, yes, you got to obey the law, but really what you need to do is overhaul the system. And
right.
You need to stop voting Democrat if Democrat is not serving you. Stop voting Republican if Republican is not serving you and if it's not serving the whole. Some people just vote just because, well, my mama was a Democrat, my grandma was a Democrat, granddaddy, and just so they were a Democrat. So they vote the ticket. They don't vote based on the issues. So we got to stop operating on that level and begin to become more mindful of the resources that we have at our disposal. We need to learn what our remedies are in law. We need to civics back in the school system. We need to put the teaching of the Constitution back in the school system, because we have no idea of what the law is. We don't even know when the man is breaking the law, because we don't know the law.
Good point. Excellent point. And that's a wonderful segue. Gentlemen, I am enjoying our conversation, and I just want to thank you all on this Thanksgiving Eve. when both of you decided, because I had to be here, no question about it, I had to be here, but you all had choices and options. That's something else that we have to express to our children. And when I say our children, I'm talking about our grown children, too, that options, and relative to what decision you make today, that will determine not only your tomorrow, but your children's tomorrow. So think about it before you move. And then and then after you have thought about it, then ask for spiritual guidance to guide you and direct you. And then once you have that, regardless of whatever way you move, I assure you, it's the right way. It's the right move. It may not seem like it right now. It may not seem like it tomorrow, but I assure you that it will be. Ladies and gentlemen, we are so pleased that you all joined us this evening, those of you who have called in online and those who are with us to share all of the wonderful information that you too have. We are smart enough to know that we are not that smart, because the collective consciousness of any speaker's audience on any given subject is always greater than that of the speaker, and we recognize that. We've got another half hour of conversation to go. Invite your friends. Call them right now. Tell them to come up online to Blog Talk Radio through that vehicle if they like, or they can just call in at 347-538-9142. Press 1, and we will bring them in. We will make sure, I'm sorry, did I say 347-838-9142, and press 1, and we will bring them, as we will bring you, if you would like, into this conversation, because this is a conversation that we are now having to have, that we have been forced to have, that wouldn't it have been nice, though, if we had had it, and then we would not have had to have Ferguson, Missouri. Wouldn't it have been nice if Dr. King had not had to gone through what he went through in the city where Mr. Cecil is, in Memphis, Tennessee, and to have been gunned down by an assassin's bullet? Wouldn't it have been nice if John F. Kennedy had not had to have been shot in Dallas, Texas, so forth and so on? Wouldn't it have been nice if right here in Little Rock, Arkansas, Governor Orville E. Faubus would not have had to stand in the front of the doors and then get troops, people that were being paid by our tax dollars, to restrict entrance by young black children strictly because of the fact that they were African-American, that they were black. But it did happen. It has happened. And now, what is it that we are able to do about it? We're going to come back in about 2 minutes and continue our conversation. We invite you again to call in and share whatever it is that you would like to share with us. And I've got a couple of things that I want to ask my two panelists that are here with us now when we come back. But I first want to tell you that we have so many wonderful, wonderful programs. We have the Progressive News Weekly program on Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. And that happens to be hosted by Daryl Clark from New York. And this is this was a long-running show on another network, but Daryl has brought it over to our network. And Daryl's guests have included well-known personalities such as my good friend Dick Gregory out of Washington, D.C., and they tend to focus on hot issues and current events. The moderator and co-host is a gentleman who is on my program tonight and our RBR director. That is Mr. Cecil McDaniel. So please, 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time on Thursdays, all right, make sure that you're there. All right, on Fridays, the Searchers Roadmap Show at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time is hosted by my moderator, Miss Rhonda Harrison from Red Feathers Lakes, Colorado, way on up yonder. The Searchers Roadmap was the first RBR show, and thus it is, in fact, the longest-running show. Rhonda is a healer and often hosts shamans from around the world at her home 9,000 feet in the mountains of Colorado. Again, as I said earlier, we would ask that you
would join us in sending light and love and goodness and grace and healing and wholeness to Rhonda this evening as she recovers so that she can come back and help us to do all of the great things that she helps us to do. On Saturday, Soul Town, The Sound of Music, is broadcast at 3 p.m., hosted from Memphis, Tennessee by Reginald Jenkins. Okay, and there is a plethora of phenomenal shows that are on for your listening pleasure. After our show this evening at 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, James Renford Powell will be on, the owner of the network, with The Laws of Material Wealth. And that show is phenomenal as well. Oftentimes I'll leave my show as exhausted as I am from having had to talk to Mr. Cecil, having had to talk to Al Lockett, and I've gotten so much from it that I'm just exhausted. But I'll call in on that show as well to be a part of that. So we invite you to please come back again and again and again to talk about the phenomenal things that are going on right now on the RBR Network. Gentlemen, I'd like to come back, and this evening, ladies and gentlemen, we are actually involved in conversation, and we are looking for a positive outcome from the Ferguson experience. We want to know what we can do, as we are doing, just by having the conversation about it. You have heard something that has spurred you to movement, that has said to you, you know what? I am going to talk to my child about this, that, or the other. I am going to talk to some other person's child. When I was growing up here in Little Rock, and gentlemen, I know that both of you can relate to this, and we were talking about it last night at another function where I was, but if I was going down the street and I decided to throw a rock across the street, whether it hit anything or not, and Miss Georgia looked out her window and saw me throwing that rock, it didn't have to hit anything, but Miss Georgia would come out of her house, stand on the porch, put her hands on her hips, and say, "Robert, Robert," and I would say, "Ma'am," she said, "Rob, did you just throw that rock?" Now I got to tell you, I'd love to be honest with you to the point that I would say I didn't think about lying, but gentlemen, I thought about lying. I really did for a moment because I knew that if I lied to Miss Jordan, and she already knew that I had thrown that rock, she was then going to pick up the phone. She was going to call anyway and tell my granny that she had to chastise me as I was on my way from school. And so Miss Georgia would then whip me, and that was okay. And then when I got home, if I didn't tell my granny quickly enough before Miss Georgia called, I'd really get a double whipping. I was going to get a whipping anyway. But at least the whipping would not be as bad as it would be if I didn't tell it. Gentlemen, can you all relate to that story?
Oh, absolutely. It used to be a time. That's when kids respected authority. And it didn't matter who the adult was in the community. If they said something to you, you had respect. And you knew that they people knew each other then. And I grew up in the projects in Newark, New Jersey. And when you're in the project, there's thousands of family just within the one structure that you're living in. So there are many parents who know most of the kids. And I remember growing up, my father at that time was the one of the maintenance men or janitors, and they moved around to different buildings, and so I knew that I could not play in the hallways or make a mess in the hallway because, you know, kids would write on the walls and do that stuff. My father had to be the one cleaning it. So I better not be caught in there or any other parent seeing me in the hallway, knowing that my father is one of the janitors that was that worked in that complex. You know, so when you talk about that, the woman see you and ask you the question, I'm very familiar with that.
That's right. What about you, Mr. Spencer?
Oh, God, yeah. Let me ask you a question. This is a rhetorical question, but I got to ask this question. What are switches made of?
What are switches made of? Al, I'm going to let you respond to that one first.
Well, I found out what switches was made of in Macon, Georgia. Me and my cousins were standing out in front throwing rocks out on Columbus Road and hit this white lady's car. And she pulled around and came back to my grandmama's house. And she told us to go out and get some switches. And so we had to tear them off of this big bush that was out in the front. And I was really trying to tear off the smallest ones I could find. But it didn't make any difference because she took the collective switches. So switches is something that came off of that bush that meant when you were told to go get a switch, you know, then you knew something wasn't going to be a pleasant outcome.
Right. Richard Pryor had a joke he told about that. He said, man, that's a heck of a psychology for somebody to go tell you to go get a switch to beat your own behind with. And he said,
right.
You better not go out there and bring back a small one. She was going to go out and get the whole tree. You know.
True.
Now, we had that experience. And the reason why I asked that was because I see a man who gets, he's chastised for whipping his son with a switch. He's even sat down on the NFL. He's a professional athlete. He can't make money and this and that and the other just because he whipped his son with a switch, with a wooden switch. The last I checked, switches were made of wood, you know, because they did come from trees. And I would rather whip my son with a switch than for you to shoot him with a 45 or 357 or whatever you're using, 9mm, you know.
Right.
Because he's going to recover from that whipping. He's going to stop crying in a minute. And I'm going to hug him and love him, sit him down and tell him, you know, I didn't want to have to do that. But if you do that, I'm going to do it again. But at least we could have that conversation. And 9 times out of 10, he's going to learn from that. And sometimes he learns just from me picking up the switch that you mean business. Oh, I don't even want to go there. So, yeah, I'm cool, you know.
Yeah.
So it's better that we whip them with switches. It's better that the neighbor whip them with switches than for you to whip my child with a 9mm because he's not getting up from that. He's not recovering from that 9 times out of 10, you know.
That's right.
Or from a stun gun. Because I had there was an incident where a child broke up a fight. He was breaking up a fight between these two girls. And he broke up the fight, and then an officer in the school tasered him. He fell back, hit his head on a concrete floor, and has not been the same since. You know? So I would rather whip my children with a switch, a wooden switch, if you want to call it a wooden switch. We know it wasn't made out of plastic. We know it wasn't made out of rubber. We know what the switch was. But, you know, to set this man down because he whipped his child with a switch, I thought that was senseless. I really did.
Yeah. And also, Cecil, I think that we are also seeing that not that there are not situations and circumstances where people take advantage of their size, of the fact that this is a child, and they do some things that they should not do. And so we want for those children to be protected as they should, and all children should be protected. But we also want, in the eyes of the law, for everything to be looked at and looked upon, and then a decision made in terms of what is what. As we move along, gentlemen, there was one other point.
Let me share this with you. I want to share this with you because, and this is something you can do some research and deal with on your own. But because we, at birth, signed the birth certificate and signed our child basically over to the state at birth, our children became property of the state and not our own. That's why they can intervene when they get ready and take your child for any reason when they get ready and tell you that you can't teach your child this or you can't teach your child that or you can't spank your child, you can't discipline your child. Yet they are not going to do the job. You are simply the custodian of the child. But they actually, by law, own your child. And that is one of the problems right there, because they own the child, and they have made the child feel that, hey, I don't have to do what anybody says. You know, the law says you can't whip me. You can't spank me anymore in the schools and this and that and the other.
I saw that happen.
The law does not love the child, you know, and so the law is not going to raise the child properly. The law does not love the child. So the child will not be raised properly. You are the custodian of the child for a reason, because they know that you have the maternal and paternal instinct and love for the child to raise this child and to steer this child in the right direction. And so they let you be the custodian, but they can come in at any time and take your child for any reason because you signed a birth certificate at their birth. In fact, you were coerced into signing that. And so you lawfully gave them your child, and then you became the custodian of their ward, of the state, always.
They can take it. They can come in and take it.
Because you gave them to them at birth.
What's strange is that the very people that, you know, I saw this transition take place in the 70s, this progressive movement where they shifted the power from the schools and the parents and put them into the children that they actually controlled. And suddenly, you know, many of us grew up, had gotten a whooping. I don't know too many people that I know that did not get a whooping when they was growing up as a kid, but they did, you know. And they're trying to make that seem like child abuse. Now, one of the things that I did going with my sons, I never whooped out of anger. That was one thing I learned. But I only selected a situation in which that level of discipline was required to make the point. I didn't just whoop just to be whooping, you know.
Right.
And but they said you should not be able to put your hands on a child at all, put them in time out and put them in a naughty time and everything. But I'm going to tell you, I work in the community. My background is in education. Very similar, Cecil, we have in common. My background, I'm finishing my doctorate right now in educational technology and cognitive development. And since I've been here, I've been building and designing systems to accelerate learning in our community because our kids are so far behind. And I run a program in the community called Feed First. Feed stands for food, enrichment, and educational development. And I'm there in the community. I hire people from the community to work in my company, and I feed the kids and provide them with free books and education. And I see the plague that has taken over. I see the lack of initiative and lack of drive that happens in the community that makes them so apathetic about being better and growing. I see the mediocrity that's been pounded into some of our youth, and it's a shame. I know the work that you do when you work in after-school programs. I ran after-school programs in 15 states, including Memphis. I ran in several of the schools in Memphis, and I remember doing a time in No Child Left Behind, SES, and they would have the parent meeting where a parent could come out and find a company that would work with their child and tutor their child and help their child. And I remember being in a school in Memphis. It was a junior high school in Egypt or something, Raleigh, Egypt. They had about 1,500 kids in that school. And do you know only 10 parents came out and 5 of them came from other schools?
Yes, I do. And that's because when this issue of neglect and leaving our children to raise themselves came about, it's not a new phenomenon. If we can, gentlemen, if we ever have this conversation again, I would like to bring onto this conversation a friend of mine, and I've had the opportunity to talk with him. He's an author, Dr. Eddie Taylor, who wrote a book called Restoring the Minds of Black America. And he talks about, in his book, about from slavery to this very day, the kinds of things that have happened to us psychologically that have been passed on from generation to generation, and it explains why we are today in the mental state that we are. It didn't say it excuses it, this or that or the other, but it explains why it is, and also it tells what we can do to move out of that state and move back into a state of mind and consciousness where we are, again, mentally, spiritually whole. So it would be a nice addition to this conversation, because that would also help us to understand not only our minds, but the minds of those who put us in those mental states.
Right. Right. Well, I welcome that opportunity, Cecil. As you know, I am open and receptive to anything that is going to help all of us to understand a little bit more about each of us. And so I welcome that opportunity. And, gentlemen, I also want to let you all know and put you on notice that we will have this conversation again, because many of the people that were not able to join us for whatever the reasons were have sent little notes and text and what have you, stating that they would like to have another opportunity to do that. And more people need to hear this dialogue. More people need to be aware of the relationship between parents and children and understand, again, that we are not dismissing the fact that many people do not know how to be proper parents. We are not dismissing the fact that many teenagers and young people who should not be parents are, in fact, parents now. And so children are raising children, and that and therein lies many of our problems and our challenges. But for all of those reasons, as well as all of the others, we will overcome them. We must overcome them. And we are dedicated to doing just that. So, Cecil, I welcome the opportunity to speak with that gentleman. Before I forget, gentlemen, and before our time runs out, I want to mention another book, which is called The New Jim Crow. Cecil, I think it was you and not Al that was talking about the penal system, about our prison system. This book is by Michelle Alexander, and it talks to the fact that something that's going on here in Arkansas, I know for certain right now, is that there is overcrowding in our prison system. But for every prisoner that is placed in the system, the state makes money. So it's a money-making opportunity for these states. And so therefore, that is part of what is going on. We're going to discuss this book a little bit later. So I ask and invite you all to go ahead and pick it up, because that, too, becomes part of the dynamics of what is going on with our young people. They don't understand that they don't have to act like thugs. They don't have to use jargon, that they can speak both sides of and be okay with it. Ladies and gentlemen, we have so much enjoyed this opportunity to come into your homes and your automobiles. This is The No Show. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan. For the last 52, 8 now, almost 9 minutes, you have been listening to Al Lockett and Cecil McDaniel, RBR director, and we are so grateful that you decided to stop through here and visit with us. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, I'd like to give each of you 15 seconds to close out with parting words. Let me start with you, Al.
We just have to get back to our core, and we have to get back to the sources that make us great. We need to get back to our youth and start it at the bottom and work up.
Excellent. Thank you, my friend, for being with me. Mr. Cecil?
I would say that love is the only tool that we're going to be able to use to correct this, from the home to the community, to the state, to the nation, to the world at large. We're going to have to start first in the home, loving our children, educating our children, loving them enough to deny them of some of the things that they may want that are not in their best interest, and loving them enough to give them those things that we know that are going to ensure that they are better individuals and better members of society.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking time from your schedules. I appreciate you, and I appreciate how you're showing up in the world. Thank you, folks. for being with us. Take good care. Have a great week, the most fabulous week of the remainder of this particular segment of your life. We'll see you next week. God bless. Take care. Create a great day. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.